Here's a startling fact. For 95% of human history, people worked about 15 hours a week and considered themselves affluent. The Jew Hansi Bushmen of the Kalahari Desert studied well into the 20th century, spent less time working than we spend commuting. They had no bosses, no alarm clocks, and no anxiety about retirement funds. Yet we, with our smartphones, air conditioning, and grocery stores, feel perpetually behind, chronically stressed, and never quite successful enough. This paradox sits at the heart of our modern condition. We've achieved unprecedented material abundance, yet we're working ourselves to death. The Japanese even have a word for it, karoshi, death by overwork. In 1930, economist John Maynard Keynes predicted we'd be working 15-hour weeks by now, with technology handling the rest. We surpassed his productivity benchmarks decades ago. So why are we still grinding through 40, 50, even 60-hour weeks? The answer isn't in our biology or our nature. It's in a 10,000-year-old mistake we're still paying for. Modern economics assumes humans have infinite desires but limited resources, the economic problem that drives our financial systems, labor markets, and self-worth. We work to bridge the gap between what we want and what we have, but this isn't universal. The Juhansi demonstrate something radical, a society organized around abundance. During a severe 1960s drought that left Botswana's farmers dependent on emergency aid, the Juhansi needed none. They sustained themselves on wild foods, consuming 2,140 calories daily while working just 17 hours weekly on food procurement, less than half the time employed Americans spend working. Marshall Sollins declared hunter-gatherers the original affluent society, noting their leisure time and the modesty of their material requirements. They achieved affluence not by producing much, but by desiring little. From the Bambuti pygmies to the Nayaka of Kerala, hunter-gatherer societies operated from environmental confidence, a belief that their landscapes would provide. The Bambuti saw the forest as mother and father, generous with everything needed. They never stored food or gathered more than necessary. Why would they? Tomorrow would provide as today had. Work isn't a human invention. It's fundamental to all life. Every organism must capture and transform energy to survive. Ludwig Boltzmann revealed that life doesn't violate thermodynamic laws. It accelerates entropy by capturing free energy, using it for work, and generating heat. Earth's biological history is a series of energy revolutions. Simple bacteria harvested geochemical energy 3.5 to 4.2 billion years ago. Cyanobacteria harnessed sunlight through photosynthesis 2.7 billion years ago, transforming the atmosphere. This great oxidation event around 2.45 billion years ago enabled energy-hungry eukaryotic cells to evolve, eventually leading to multicellular life. What distinguishes humans isn't that we work, all life works, but how we work. We're the only species to develop complex, cumulative technologies that dramatically expand our energy-capturing abilities, from digging sticks to nuclear power plants. This reveals something profound. Work isn't just what we do, it's what we are. Persistence hunting shaped our running abilities and sweat glands. Tool making influenced our dexterity and cognition. We're literally built to work, but not for modern cubicles and assembly lines. Around 12,500 years ago, populations in at least 11 locations worldwide independently began cultivating crops and domesticating animals. This wasn't progress discovered, it was a response to crisis. The Natufians of the Levant initially thrived harvesting wild cereals. Then, around 12,900 years ago, temperatures plunged during the Younger Dryas period. Forced to abandon villages as food yields collapsed, they endured 1,300 years of harsh conditions. When temperatures finally surged upward, they no longer trusted nature's providence. They built granaries, storing tons of wheat, evidence they had lost faith in environmental abundance. The most striking monument to this transformation is Göbekli Tepe in southeastern Turkey, built beginning in the 10th millennium BC. This Stone Age zoo features 240 limestone monoliths carved with diverse animal imagery, the first evidence of humans securing sufficient surplus energy to work across generations toward a grand vision unrelated to immediate survival. Here's the uncomfortable truth. Farming made life worse. Skeletal evidence shows systematic nutritional deficiencies, anemia, bone deformations from repetitive labor, and work-related injuries. Zoonotic pathogens from domestic animals introduced tuberculosis, measles, and influenza, now accounting for nearly 60% of human diseases. Genetic evidence confirms ancient agricultural catastrophes that wiped out 40 to 60% of established farming populations in Europe. Farming also transformed time itself. Hunter-gatherers experienced time as abundant. Days could be spontaneously taken off without consequence. Farmers became hostage to inflexible seasonal cycles, where missing critical windows meant starvation. Stonehenge and similar Neolithic monuments were massive stone calendars marking these seasonal transitions. Perhaps most significantly, farming created the fundamental division between nature and culture that foragers never recognized. The Juhansi had no words distinguishing natural from cultural realms, seeing themselves as integral parts of the Earth's face. Farmers necessarily separated themselves from their environment, transforming wild spaces into domesticated ones through constant labor. This established a transactional relationship with the land. Farmers exchanged their work for harvests, viewing the environment as indebted to them. Money originated not in barter, but in these credit arrangements between farmers, waiting for their land to pay them back.
Benjamin Franklin embodied our modern paradox. Despite inventing labor-saving devices and envisioning a four-hour workday, he remained obsessively industrious, warning that time is money, a fundamental break from hunter-gatherer perspectives. Cities accelerated this transformation. In 2008, humanity crossed a historic threshold. More people lived in cities than countryside for the first time. In mere millennia, we shifted from environmental minimalists to complex manufactured colonies. Cities required specialization. Until the Industrial Revolution, even in Rome, 80% worked the land. The 20% in cities pioneered carpentry, architecture, engineering, bureaucracy, law enforcement. Imperial Rome had 268 different career paths. Unlike foragers whose identities came from shared geography and kinship, urban dwellers' identities merged with their trades. Cities also bred aspiration-driven scarcity. Keynes distinguished between absolute needs, finite requirements like food, and relative needs, infinite status-driven desires. These relative needs motivate us to work harder even after basic needs are met, the hamster wheel we're still running on today.
Oxford researchers found 47% of U.S. jobs face automation by 2030, concentrated in waste management, transportation, retail, and manufacturing. Automation will likely deepen inequality by eliminating labor advantages of lower-wage countries while increasing returns on capital. The top 10% already own 85% of global assets, with the top 1% holding 45%. Keynes envisioned automation creating abundance, where people would work minimally and wealth-seeking would be seen as a somewhat disgusting morbidity. Yet working hours remain fixed around 40 per week, with only 15% globally reporting job engagement. The malady of infinite aspiration thrives in digital ecosystems engineered to manufacture dissatisfaction. The Juhansi represent humanity's most sustainable economic model. While we can't return to foraging, these societies suggest what post-scarcity could resemble: moderated material desires, reduced inequality, valuing ends over means. Recognizing that core economic assumptions stem from agriculture frees us to imagine alternatives. The question isn't whether we can afford to reimagine work, it's whether we can afford not to.